I'm sorry, 5:30. 5:39. Let's read the psukim again very quickly. Kel kano v'nekeim Hashem. Hashem is a God. Kano, that is zealous. V'nekeim, he exacts revenge. Kama, v'nekeim Hashem. Ubal chema. The second expression is Hashem takes revenge. Repetition. Ubal chema, and he is a baal, the master of anger. The third expression is Noikem Hashem litzadav v'noiterhu le'oivav. Hashem takes revenge against his enemies, and he guards his enmity for his enemies. Three expressions. We learned yesterday different perushim. We learned two perushim in the significance of the three expressions. Just to review very quickly, according to the Mitzudos, it's Hoya, Hoive, V'yiye. Kel Kanoi v'Noikem Hashem is the past. Noikem Hashem u'Baal Chemo is the present. And Noikem Hashem litzadav v'noiterhu le'oivav is the future. And then we learned Rashi. Rashi says that this refers to the three stages of the galus of Aseres HaShvatim. Melech Ashur exiled the Aseres HaShvatim in three stages. The first stage was relatively painless. It was painful to be going to galus. That's not disgusting. We're talking about the method. Was there torture? Was there murder? Was there humiliation? The first stage appears not. It was done very delicately. The second stage was not pleasant at all. And the third was outright brutal and cruel. And Hashem will punish the nation of Ashur for each one of these events, each stage of the galus, uniquely. Okay, then we said Hashem Erech Apayim. Hashem is a God of patience. Ugedol Koyach. An abundance of power. V'nake lo yinake. Hashem b'sufo uvis ora darkoi. Hashem's way is with a tempest and a storm. V'anon avak raglov. And Hashem creates darkness. In many perushim, we'll leave it for now. But let's go to the Radak. We learned many perushim on that pasuk as well. Radak over here, pasuk day, says on page 539. Kel kanoi v'noikeim Hashem. Mekanehu ba'avur amoi. Hashem is jealous when mekaneh atem takes revenge. Why? Ba'avur amo, for his nation. Okay, it does not say that in the pasuk. It does not say his nation. Kamosh Amar, we have to draw from other similar psukim, other prophets who says something very similar. V'yikaneh Hashem li'artzei v'yachmol al amoi. Being that we find elsewhere that Hashem takes revenge, and in that context it's used in reference to his nation, we have a right to assume, although here it does not say that Hashem is taking revenge for his nation, we have a right to assume that to be the case, because if you would just look at this pasuk independently, you may suggest that this that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes is because Hashem is angry at people who are not living up to being morally good, people who are just are not behaving the way they should amongst themselves. That's not what the Radak says. Radak says that the need of kina, you can, I don't know how far you can go with this, but at least in this context, the need of kina here is one thing only: Klal Yisrael. When a nation harms, inflicts pain upon Hashem's chosen nation, that gets Hashem worked up. If Hashem harms if a nation harms another nation, let's say there's a world war going on between there's a war between Iraq and Iran, does Hashem use the midah of kina? Hashem may punish man for crimes against humanity. If Iran and Iraq are using chemical warfare to harm innocent people for no good reason, Hashem certainly does not take that. Is not going to sit back and ignore what the crimes. But does Hashem use the midah of kina when one nation harms another nation? Not necessarily. Well, let's say there's a nation that was in the past religious. They acknowledged the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then they decided to become pagans, atheists, or worship idols. Does that mean that does Hashem, when Hashem gets angry, that this a human being is failed to recognize Hashem's existence? Does Hashem express his anger in the term of kinah? Not necessarily. We don't know. The Radak is saying something very powerful. He's saying that the nida of kinah, which connotes an intensity. When a person gets jealous, we know jealousy can cause a person to do really wild, by human beings, wild things. Here on the news every day, if you listen to 10-10 Wins, the news, so what is 90% of, obviously, this one was murdered, and this one was killed, there was a shooting. Probably 90% about all these murders and these killings and these shootings are about boyfriend, girlfriends. Right? Isn't that what it's all about most of the time? That this guy has a girlfriend, and the girlfriend just dumped him for someone else. So her boyfriend lost control, and he went and he did crazy things. 90% of the time, that's what you hear on the news. Kinah, intense jealousy. Intense jealousy causes a reaction in the person to do things that are not in his best interest. He knows that. He doesn't care, because that's what kinah can do. By the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have a word kinah. Now, what kinah is? Kinah by Hashem is obviously not the same thing as kinah by a human being, but certainly the fact that we use this word interchangeably has to teach us that there is some relationship, which indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to an extreme, goes to a much greater level of punishment than he would ordinarily do. And where do we find Hashem reacting in such a fashion? So we have here an insight from the Radak, it's not obvious. He's saying that the kinah is generally used in reference to his nation. When somebody in the world causes harm to Klal Yisrael, Hashem gets worked up. Hashem then expresses kinah. The word kinah here appears in the pasuk numerous times. Nekanehu ba'avur amoy. It's a critical yisoid of the Radak. Shkimoy sh'omar vayikaneh Hashem li'artzo. But not when it's not his nation. When it's one nation against another nation or man against God, not necessarily does Hashem get angry with the extreme term of kinah. Hashem has compassion upon his nation. Hashem sees their suffering in Golus. Hashem, in this context, will take revenge from the king of Ashur and his seed. Even though he had permission from Hashem to exile Klal Yisrael, Kamosh Amar, Hoy Ashur Shevet Api, who Hoysif Lahara Yosem and Haroi more than he should have, Kamosh Amar, Ani Kotzafti Ma'at, Vehema Ozru Lura, they helped for evil, meaning they went the extra mile. This is the old Yisoid from the Ramban, Mitzrayim, why in Yoni de Yoima, we'll learn about Parshas Bo, Parsh Beshalach, the Ten Makos, Amakas Pachoyos, Yisias Mitzrayim, they were obliterated, Kimitsulo Shein Badogim. Why was Egypt so severely punished? Hashem gave them permission. Ger yihyeh zar'acha bi'eretz loy lohem va'avodum v'inuy oisam arba me'oshana. There will be a nation that will come along and will afflict you for 400 years. So why was Mitzrayim so severely punished when they were given permission by Hashem to do what they did? There are many answers. One answer is it did not have to be them. Why did Egypt take it upon themselves to be the one, the lucky one, that's going to do the dirty work? Someone else could have done the dirty work. Or, even if Egypt was the only one capable of doing this, they went overboard. They did not have to torture them. They did not have to relish in the Jews' suffering. And for that, Megalgalin Olav Es HaKol. Once you reveal that you're not doing it L'Shem Shamayin, you're doing it for your own personal satisfaction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to punish you as if I never commanded you to do this at all. It's exactly the same thing here with Ashur. Ashur has done to Klal Yisrael irreparable harm, damage, that's the goals of the Aseret HaShvatim, and Hashem gave them permission. How do we know Hashem gave Ashur permission? This is a very critical pasuk. It says in Zechariah, it says in Yeshaya, Hoy Ashur Shevet Api. Hashem explicitly gave Asher permission to harm Klal Yisrael. They are Hashem's baton. They are Hashem's stick. They are Hashem's Shevet to hit the Jewish people, yet they were punished because in Zechariah it says, Ani kotzavti me'at. I only was slightly angry. You, Asher, went a little bit too far, and you went the extra mile. Vehema ozru l'ra'a. Right.
To a point,
exactly. That's what we just said. To put the children as bricks in the wall and call Abena Yilad, Ayeret HaAshtichu, was way, way overboard. And that's for sure. You hear about the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, you always read about the Hana, the glee, the joy they had in torturing Jews. It wasn't bad enough just to follow orders. Okay, the defense, the Nuremberg trial, everyone, they're always coming to defend. Just following orders, it's total baloney. But besides that, even the total nonsense is, why did you have so much Hana? You look at these pictures, you always see the Nazis smiling and mocking and the pleasure they had in torturing Jews and looting their property. This is a clear indication this has nothing to do with Ribbono Shel Olam. This is pure evil, pure evil. Megalgalin Alav Es HaKol, and it will be punished for everything, even for what they were supposed to do. Not Nazis, of course. They don't have permission to do anything. I'm talking about them. Egypt, the Egyptians, and the nation of Asher. Next.
Is that the same thing that happened for Yavon and for Edom? Because they were powerful. I mean, really powerful.
At that point in time, Edom and Yavon, they were no prophets. You see, it's hard for us to relate to the generation. In the time of Nebuchadnezzar, they were prophets, and it's. You get the sense, it's almost as if the Ribbono Shel Olam called Nebuchadnezzar on his smartphone and said, Nebuchadnezzar, I have a job for you. I got a job for you. I want you to go and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. I want you to exile the Jewish people. It's Mamash Ke'ilu Hashem himself. He didn't speak to Mamash, but through the prophets, through Daniel. It's Ke'ilu he was speaking to them. Chagat HaMalachi. When it comes to Asher was even before that. Asher certainly, it was Kilu Hashem called him up on the phone and said, "I got a job for you." They're going to be punished as if Hashem did not call them up because of how far overboard they went and the hana they had in doing this. When you're coming to already after the Churban Bayis Rishon, and you're coming to even Parasumodai and Yavon. And certainly Edom, you can't say that anymore. You can't go say that the Romans were enlisted by the Ribbono Shel Olam, that there was a telephone call from Hashem to go do the job. They were barbarians. They did this for their own pleasure. And not the Nazis, nothing to talk about. So you can't say that. We have to make a very clear divide between the time when there were prophets and a time when there is no prophet. We have no hasaga what it means to live in a generation where there are Nevi'im. Isn't it amazing? You can actually speak directly to Shemayim to know what's going on. The biggest problem we have since the Churban is we have no clue. We live in the days. We live in the dark. Everything that's happening around us, we have absolutely no understanding of why it happens. What could we do to stop it? What could we do to prevent it from happening? There's no communication between this world and the next world. Nothing. There's no line of communication. That makes life very difficult. And we have to attempt to draw from our history and from our experience and to have emunah more than anything else to connect this world to the other world. But in the time of the Nevi'im, you know, there's a telephone. Every shul has a red telephone. There were 1,200,000 prophets roaming the streets. That means you have a question, you want to know why something happened today, go commentary on the news, the Navi will tell you exactly in utter detail why things are happening the way they are. Okay, now you'll say, if that's the case, why would a person worship an idol? Well, Zeh l'umazeh, Hashem created an intense Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah to counteract the revelation, the open revelation of understanding the ways of Hashem. There always has to be an equal degree of, it has to be balance, an equalness, so it's an entirely different world that we enter into, but it's so relevant because we need to analyze and understand that world in order for us to try to guess in our day and age why things are happening and what we can do to improve our situation and bring the geula. Let's go further. Next entry. The Radak over here says, listen, it says the word kina and Hashem so many times. Don't get worked up. Okay, don't lose sleep over this. Learn it on a very simple level. It's poetry. The Navi Nachum, we have not yet been introduced into the style of language of Nachum. Each of the Nevi'im is very unique. Okay, we learn Micha. Micha was a master. You cannot deny the fact that in the seven Perakim that we learned, Micha has demonstrated a very powerful use of the Hebrew language. His poetry, his play on words is second to none. Every Navi, if you notice, has a style. Yeshaya has a certain distinct style. Yechezkel is also very distinct, very unique. Yirmiyah is a little different. Yirmiyah is a whole different type of sefer. It's on the one hand, it's easier. It's more like a narrative. Many psukim are written more in the form of a very straightforward. You know, the words don't always need to be rearranged. But yet, there are certain parts of Yirmiyah that are very complex. Okay, who else? We have Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, Yechezkel. We say Yechezkel is very unique, and unique language. And Nachum, we're first now being introduced, short Sefer, only three Perakim. There's not much space for him to teach us his usage, the way he used the language. But here, there's obviously a lot of repetition. Hashem's name appears five times. The word Nekama, let's count the comment. Kanoi, Noikeim, Noikeim, Noikeim. That's 4. Vinake, 5. Yinake. That's not really the same word. Maybe it is. It's the reverse. It's Kuf Nun, Nun Kuf. Okay, so at least four times, and then we have a play on the word, a play on the word of Nake. Nake, notice, is the same Shoresh as kina, but the letters are reversed. And that creates, that's a topic of discussion. Are the two words related? Where do we have something like this? Keves and kesev. What is a keves and a kesev? A sheep. What's the difference? There's almost no difference. There is a difference. I forgot we had over here. You know who told me the difference? I have to ask him again. The one who puts out the Yedidya Herdenfeld. So Yedidya Herdenfeld, he was very close to Rybelski. Rybelski once asked, what is the difference between a kesev and a keves? And Rybelski said he does not know. That's a big statement, because Rybelski, there's nothing he did not know. And he said he did not know what the difference is. And then Yedidya, he found the answer. He found that one of the Farshim explained the difference, and he told it to Rabbi Belsky. And Rabbi Belsky always reminded him and always thanked him for enlightening him the difference between a keves and a kesef, a simla and a salma. Okay, simla and a salma. What's the difference? I don't know. No difference. These are very, very, very fine nuances. There's a whole collection of words where you find the letters are interchanged. And here we have another example of kina and nake lo and the comma. Kina, the main syllable is kuf kina, and the comma, the main syllable is nika. There's a mem also, nekama. An action. Kane. So kane also, it doesn't matter how you use it. There's a feeling and a pula. No, but when I came, a kina is a kel kanoi. Kanoi means it's also used as a pu'ula. Many of the nouns can be changed into, not all, but many. Many nouns can be interchanged into pu'ulois, and many pu'ulois can be changed into nouns. The Paitanim do that. They have no restrictions. That was the challenge to the Paitanim, is that some of them went a little bit too far, and they took words that some held were sacred, cannot be turned into a verb, and they anyway made it into a verb. But in the Torah, there are many, many words where you find are both used in the noun form and in the verb form. And I think kin is one of those. Kin, it's a feeling, is a kel kanoi, but you find it also being used as in the verb form where Hashem actually expresses it. Now, noikeim may in fact be that word, but it's unique in that the letters are interchanged. It's instead of the kuf coming before the nun comes before the kuf. Does that mean it's really the same word? Like beged, like simla, salma, keves, kesef? Maybe. Maybe there is a relationship. It's interesting. People interchange letters. I recently submitted an advertisement, not an advertisement, like for a journal. And I was very disappointed in that the office, I don't know what they did. They retyped it. I gave it in an electronic form. You see, Chaim Berlin and Yeshua Gosky, there's no one like him. He does a journal, unbelievable, not even one mistake. 1,200 pages, not even one mistake. He's unbelievable. Most yeshivas are not so fortunate to have someone in the office that meticulously can go through every ad and rewrite it. And catch all the mistakes. In fact, they make mistakes. You give them an ad already in electronic format. I don't know what they're doing. They retyped it. Why would they want to retype it? And when they retyped it, they did exactly this. They made a lot of spelling mistakes, and the spelling mistakes were they interchanged two letters. They put the Zion before the Chaf. I mean, it's a sloppy typing mistakes. And obviously, it's in the when you're typing so quickly, and you see letters. It's very common, you interchange two letters. Now, in the Torah, you can't say that. You can't chas v'sholem say it's a typing mistake. Keves and kesef and simla and salma. That's Apikorsis to say that. So, yeah, but it's very appealing to try to say that, right? Because it's a very common type of, there's a very common spelling mistake where you interchange the letters. Nevertheless, over here we have two different words. We have the word kanoi and noikeim. Even though the word noikeim has another letter that's clearly a major letter in its shoresh, the mem, that comes at the end, but you cannot ignore the fact that they're very much related, nekama, revenge, and kanoi, jealousy, kina. When a person is jealous, he takes revenge. Are they the same words? You can't really say they are, because the word nekama has a mem, part of the shoresh, and kina does not have that mem. There's an aleph, or there's even nothing. You want to say there's a two-letter shoresh, if you can say such a thing. But obviously, in language, Hebrew language is so unique in the relationships. That's a very unique thing in Hebrew language. You don't have that in any other language. I mean, maybe you have it, but not to this degree of relationships, cousins, ancestors, of concepts that are related in letters, the interchanging of letters. Let's go further. Noikim Hashem kol kol in l'chazin. The reason why this repetition is only nothing more than the l'chazin v'yesh b'farsh from say, ki zocha sholesh nekoves k'neged sholesh galuya shtigla melech asher es Yisrael. Who said this? Rashi. The Radak over here is quoting Rashi. The reason why over here there are three expressions in this pasuk is we are referring to the three stages of the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim. This is a Yesoid that repeats itself everywhere. Wherever you blink, you're going to see this Yesoid again and again, that the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim took place in three stages. It's a critical yesod in the golos of Ashur. Why is it so critical? We learned this many, many times. Because the golos of Yehuda also took place in three stages. Zeh l'umazeh. First it was Yehoyachin. Yehoyachin was exiled. And then there was, I already forgot all this information. There were three stages. The Churban was the last stage, but there were three different stages in the conquering of the Nebuchadnezzar over the Malchus of Yehuda. Kineged, the three stages of...
The three stages at different times.
Right, right. We did this yesterday. We spoke about this yesterday in detail, right? We did the Rashi yesterday. Okay, so we see the same exact thing we call Ibn Khazi Yishuv Hashem, Hizocha Sholosh, Nekomos Kneged Sholosh, Gul Yashigla, Melech Ashur, Es Yisrael. Next, Vitzarav, V'oivav, we have here two words. What's the difference between a tsar, and an oyev? What's the difference? Hey Malchei Ashur, B'mokam Hazem, V'chein Osa, these are the kings of Ashur. Okay, two different terms, simply, V'chein Osa, L'chol Tzara Yisrael, Hashem punishes all of our enemies, including Egypt and including Nebuchadnezzar. The Oyve Yisrael Heim Oyve Hakel Vitzarav. Those who hate the Jews are Hashem's enemies. Your enemy is my enemy. Not like the common expression, my enemy's enemy is my friend. Right? My enemy's enemy, not discussing over here, the enemy of the Jewish people is the enemy of Hashem. Next, Vinoiter. Now, by the way, he does not only explain the difference between a tsar and an oyev. That's a common idea. The Gra, I think the Gra talks, one is an enemy that's hidden and one is out in the open. Okay, an oyev is Miloshin of Eva. Eva means it's within the person on the outside. He hugs you, he kisses you, everything is fine and good, but inside he has Eva. What is Eva? Eva means it's a hidden hatred. There's a enmity, there's a built up hatred beneath the surface. A tsar is someone who openly declares war on you. So we have in history two types of enemies. Enemies out in the open who have declared war, and we have enemies that pretend, who make believe to be our friends, but truthfully, they're really trying to undermine us behind the scenes.
Haman is described as both.
Tsar v'oyev. Two different, a complex person. On the one hand, out in the open, he's trying to destroy us, but he's also fooling us in the way he conducts himself to gain advantage.
Could be what she's referring to is towards Achash Beirush.
Which
secretly he's plotting against you, besides openly being hostile to my people.
Both elements are there. Let's go further. Vinoiter. What does the mean noiter? Noiter means to guard. A person keeps within, he holds within hatred. That's why the word noiter fits with the word oyev. Oyev means a hidden enemy. A hidden enemy is secretly guarding his hatred to be released at a later point in time. The noiter, even though he does not take revenge immediately, he waits. He waits patiently for the right moment to punish. Kanoi, toar, kano is a title. It is an adjective. It's not an action. It's a description of Hashem. Hashem is a God that has feelings of a desire to punish, to take revenge to his enemies. K'may Hashem kano shemo. Next week, Elo Shehem Shnei Mishkolim. Two different grammatical forms. Pasuk Gimel, Hashem erech apayim kachu midasai, shamarich kasai l'rashaim. Hashem is patient. Ugedol koyach hu lispol kasai shelo yinkai miyod. Okay, according to the Radak, Ugedol Koyach is seemingly identical to Erech Apayim. Hashem holds back. V'chein Amar Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom Yigdal No Koyach Hashem. What does that mean? The Amar Acharav Hashem Erech Apayim. It's an amazing insight. Where are you going to see such an interpretation? The Radak is saying that when it says in the Pasuk Yatar Yigdal Koyach Hashem, the greatness of Hashem is expressed in Erech Apayim. According to the Radak, the Erech Apayim is a description of Hashem's greatness. And there, it's in the reverse order. The Ata Yigdal No Koyach Hashem, and then Moshe says, Hashem, you are in Erech Apayim. Here, it's the other way around. Hashem Erech Apayim, and this is your greatness. So the question is, why the reverse? Why does Nachum express it one way, whereas Moshe expressed it a different way? Order is very important in Yadus. Everything in Yadus is about Seder. And when the order is reversed, obviously there is a meaning. Moshe Rabbeinu, he first expressed the actual Midah and then explained it. Nachum is viewing, is giving the explanation, and then is coming to attribute this explanation to one of Hashem's midos. I think the answer is very simple, because Nachum is living in the time of, is not living in times of Golos, there was a Beis HaMikdash, but he's living in the time where he's experiencing life. Moshe Rabbeinu is setting the rules. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's going to Shemayim. Moshe Rabbeinu is not in this world. He's in heaven. And he's praying for Klal Yisrael. Hashem should spare Klal Yisrael from being destroyed. So there he is describing, he sees Hashem in its purest form, undiluted. So he says, Hashem, you are the Ata Yigdal No Koyach Hashem. And then Moshe explains, we today are not in Shemayim. We are down here. We are observers. What do we observe? We observe Hashem's Hanhogos. When we experience Hashem's Hanhogos, we can now that's what it means, the need of Yigdal No Koyach Hashem. It's all a matter of perspective. Where do you stand? Moshe stood in heaven. He sees Hashem for who he is. Hashem, you are great in power. And what does that mean for mankind? It means Hashem is Erech Apayim. We don't see Hashem. We experience Hashem. And through our experiences, we now are able to define Hashem for our experiences. Thus, we experience Hashem's Erech Apayim. Oh, now we understand this is the need of Hashem. You are Gedol Koyach. Okay, I'm trying the different ways of experiencing Moshe versus us, yeah? Okay. Next, go further. Next, the Amar Gedol Koyach, Gedol Koyach Hu Lisbol Kasa, Shlo Yin Kam Yohad, V'chein Amar Moshe Rabbeinu, Ol V'Shalom, Yigdal No Al Koyach Hashem, V'yom Acharav, Asher Echapayim, Gadol Ksib Bevav, Ukwi Beloivav, V'komat Schataf, Hadal Dalit, V'bnei Simichusoy Al Milo Mila El. The word here is spelled with a Vav. However, we pronounce it Ugidol. Ugidol Koyach. Why? Smichus. Because what Gedol is next to the word Koyach. However, how is it spelled in the Pasuk? Vigodol. Hashem is Gedol. Vigodol Koyach. So the question is, why was it spelled with a Vav? I do not know. But being that we read the two words together, we have no choice but to read it Gedol Koyach, and the Vav falls away. If you would read it with the Vav, it would seem then that it would be the conclusion of Erech Apayim. Hashem, Erech Apayim, V'Gadol. What about the word Koyach?
You notice that there's a hyphen after, in the Gadol form.
That's why you have to make it Gadol.
Right.
Because it's Samuch, the word Koyach.
I don't know if they're supposed to be.
Right,
cannot be. It wouldn't belong there afterwards.
If you put the word Gadol next to the word Koyach, they have no choice but to take away the Vav, Gadol Koyach. If you have a vav, godol, that would be an end of a sentence. Hashem, erech apayim, v'godol, period. What about koyach? It's hanging fruit. It's just, it doesn't fit.
It's suspended
in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Obviously, the fact that it was spelled with a vav teaches us that you should read it both ways. That you should read it, Hashem, erech apayim, v'godol. That Hashem is godol in his own right. And koyach is not meant to be interpreted at all. But there's another reading of Hashem Erech HaPayim period, Ugedol Koyach. Hashem has great power. Two different types of greatness. Because if you connect the word Godol to Koyach, Godol is not an independent expression. Godol is a description of Hashem's Koyach. Hashem is Koyach. He is the ultimate power. 28. A Kaddish is all about 28. How many letters are there in the phrase Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mivarach Le'olam Uliolmei Olmaya? 28 letters. How many words are there in Kaddish until Chatzi Kaddish? 28 words. Kaddish is all about the number 28. And that's why we say V'ato Yigdal Na Koyach Hashem. Zog Kaddish. When you say Kaddish, what are you really doing? You are fulfilling this that Moshe Rabbeinu said. Moshe says, say Kaddish. You learn. You say Zog Kaddish. V'ato Yigdal Na. May it be great, the Koyach of Hashem. Kaddish has 28 words, and the main part of Kaddish is Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevarach Le'olam Uliolmei Olmaya, which has exactly 28 letters. So what is the number 28? 28 is Koyach. Hashem is the force of this world, energy. By the Goyim, there's alternative medicine. You ever hear alternative medicine, alternative healing? Rabelski is a Das Yochid on this. He holds all forms of alternative medicine, not all, 95% of alternative medicine is Avodah Zarah Mamash. Okay, yoga, women go for yoga, they give birth, Avodah Zarah Mamash. I don't even know all these names. There's a whole, so I put out a whole book. He's a Das Yochid. No one holds of this. All of the Paiskim across the board hold, there's nothing wrong with all of these types of, techniques. I once went to a doctor. I didn't go for the doctor for this, but he started doing this. He told me to lie down, and he starts feeling my body, and he starts telling me all these crazy things about myself, about my parents. How do you know by touching me about who was a stronger force in my life, my mother, my father? And my focal point of energy is off, and he has to do this to push it in the right direction. All these very bizarre things. All right, people come to him. I didn't go in for that. I went in for something else. But he, as a perk, he did it on me. I don't know what he was doing, but whatever it is, it is. But I have a whole book on this. All the different types. Rybelski, he researched this to the end of the world. If you read that book, it's not real. How much time he spent reading up on types of healing that you've never heard of. And he concludes that all of it is based, all of it is pure, unadulterated Avodah Zarah. All based on there's a force of energy in this world which comes to a person, and he has to channel it in the right way, in the right nerves. And if it's off, it causes illness. Not all different religions. There are many, many different types. All of them have in common. All of them have in common this concept of energy. There's a force of energy in this world, which connects to your body, and everything has to be in sync. And if it's not perfectly, your body is not perfectly aligned to channel the force of energy, then person gets sick. So you have to go to a mumche, and he will realign this force of energy in the world to your body to get you back to where you're supposed to be, and you'll be healed. Now, the whole world, there are a lot of people that are into this. They love this stuff, and they go to doctors. They pay a fortune of money, and the vast majority of the Gedolei Yisrael hold it is not. There's absolutely nothing wrong. It's kosher. You can do it. Belsky holds that it's all pure Avodah Zarah. It's based upon a force other than the Ribbonoi Shel Olam. Now the truth is, the Ribbonoi Shel Olam is this force. Okay, he really is this force. Hashem is described as Koyach. Hashem is the life force of everything in this world. Moshe Rabbeinu said, V'ata now, Yigdal na koyach Hashem. Hashem is a koyach. May it be exalted, the koyach of Hashem. And that's why Kaddish is 28 words and Yehei Shmei Rabbah is 28 letters. What is Chochmah? Chochmah is koyach ma. Chochmah is the letters. Wisdom is an acknowledgement of koyach ma. Koyach is nothing. And what does it mean, koyach is nothing? It means your power, man's power, is nothing relative to the koyach of Hashem. The ata now. And what is man's superiority over anything in this world? Wisdom. Chochmah. Man has wisdom. Animals do not. Chochmah. But Chochmah, the ultimate Chochmah, Chazal say, is to acknowledge that your wisdom or your uniqueness, your power, is nothing relative to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chochmah are the letters Ches, Chof. Take those two letters and reverse them. Like we just said before, many times, you can take letters and you can reverse them. So Chochmah, the first two letters, turns into Koyach, and the last letters are Mo. Nothing. What is it? Shofar, when we blow Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Chazal say the blowing of a Shofar is a Chochmah ve'eina melacha. It's not considered to be anything significant. It's a Chochmah. What is the deep meaning of that, Chazal? When you come on the Yom Hadin Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what you're saying to Hashem is, Koyach Ma, the Shofar, which represents my power, the truth is, Koyach Ma, my Koyach is nothing relative to your Koyach. Hashem is described as Koyach. Moshe Rabbeinu said it all. The ata now, yigdal na, koyach Hashem. May your koyach be magnified. What about me? What about my koyach? I'm a human being. A human being differentiates himself with the gift of wisdom. You know what wisdom is? Tachlis hayidia leida shaloi neida. The ultimate goal of wisdom is to know that you know nothing. What is chachmah? Koyach ma. So man's koyach relative to Hashem's koyach is zero versed infinity. Here we have a taste of that. Hashem, Erech HaPayim, Hashem, you have patience. And now we have a Krivuch Sif. We have Ugidol Koyach. The way it is pronounced is without the Vav. The word Godol is modifying the word Koyach. Hashem, you are the ultimate Koyach. You are Gidol Koyach, similar to Moshe, Yigdal Na Koyach Hashem. How did that manifest itself? So the other, go further, being patient. But it cannot be ignored that there is here a Krivuch Sif. Krivuch Sif, which is, there is, it's spelled with a Vav, which would indicate Hashem Erech HaPayim V'Godol. Hashem, you are great in your own right. Forget about koyach. Remove koyach from the equation. That's a whole different picture. If we're trying to, Moshe Rabbeinu was koyach Hashem, and Nachum is saying, forget about koyach. Don't describe Hashem as being koyach. Describe Hashem as being Godol, great in his own right. Okay, so these are just concepts, which obviously we don't really know what these things mean, but we do say Kaddish every single day. And before we say Kaddish every single day, you can really hear Moshe Rabbeinu from Shemayim is whispering to the Tzibur, Nu, Zog Kaddish, Ve'ato now, Yigdal no Koyach Hashem. Magnify the Koyach of Hashem. What is the Koyach of Hashem? Yiskadal, the Yiskadash Shmei Rabbah. May his exalted name be holy, may it be praised, may it be known throughout the entire world.
Is there a relation of Koach to Chesed? Hashem Erech HaPrayim Ugedol Chesed?
Ugedol Chesed. I don't know the answer. It's obviously there must be something.
What is the Koach of Hashem?
The greatness
would be his Chesed.
Well, there are many different manifestations of Hashem's greatness. Over here in this specific pasuk, we're getting one little insight from the Radak, and he's telling us it refers to Hashem's patience, the ability to hold yourself back. Like it says in the Mishnah, Eze Ezehu Gibor HaKoivesh Es Yitzro, a person that can restrain himself. That's a true Gibor. Okay, let's go further. Okay, next page. V'nakeh yinakeh, the Radak, page 541. V'nakeh yinakeh, al hu she'marich apoy l'roshayim, lo yinakeh samin aparonis. T'may she'herich l'malchesh Ashur, even though Hashem is patient, but v'nakeh, to absolve them from sin, lo yinakeh. They will ultimately get what they deserve. Ulu b'soif lokach nishmos nikmos mehem. Ultimately, Hashem will punish. According to Radak, this expression is one expression. And that means, although it appears that Hashem is forgiving, because Hashem does not punish immediately, Hashem is Erech HaPayim, make no mistake, v'nakei, to clean you, to view you as being clean from sin, lo yinake. Hashem will not let you get away with this. There will indeed be punishment. So let's appreciate this, because this is not what we learned yesterday. Yesterday we learned, I think, three perushim for this very important term that we say very often. We say very often, we lay in this, v'nake lo yinake. How do we simply translate that? So we learned, there are two midas, v'nake, Hashem is forgiving, period. Lo yinake, Hashem is not forgiving. How could that be? The answer is, for people who do teshuvah, Hashem is forgiving. For those who do not do teshuvah, Hashem is not forgiving. According to Chazal, we take this expression and we put a hard break in between the two expressions, and it depends who are we discussing. Then we learned the parish of the Mitzudos, and he said a fascinating insight. It means there is a copay. Although Hashem generally is very forgiving and is moichel, there will always be a sting. There will always be a little bit punishment. You're not going to get your medicine and visit the doctor for free, even if you have the best insurance. You have to pay a few dollars. There has to be a copay in order that you should recognize that nothing is for free. Don't take advantage of the system. That's what Menakei lo yinake, I forgive you, but not entirely. There's going to be a little bit of punishment in order that you should be reminded this is not a world of Hefkeros. It's a very beautiful parish. That's what the Mitzvot of said. And then we learn the other parish of Rashi, V'nakei lo yinake. I already forgot. What do we say? What do we say? V'nakei lo yinake. I forgot. Umikol makom v'nakei lo yinake. Elfi shecha paimu. No, I take it back. That's really what the Radak is saying now, the same idea. It means, even though you get the impression that I forgive you because I'm so patient, no. Vinakei is saying it's a continuation of Hashem's patience. Hashem is Erech HaPayim. He's patient. And there and thus, man comes to the conclusion, he gets the impression, Nakei, that Hashem is forgiving. That's a mistake. Lo Yinake. I'm not forgiving. I will give you what you deserve 100% in the right time. The reason why we need to express this idea in this language is because the word Nakei comes after we mention the midah of patience. I'm patient. I give man the impression that I am forgiving. I am nake. I'm sorry to disturb your sleep. Lo yinake. That's not true. I'm patient because it's not the ideal time to punish. But when the ideal time to punish arrives, you will get fully what you deserve. Next. Hashem besufa uvisara darkoi. Hashem's way is to punish with a tempest and a strong wind. Kishaba al oivav lahashchitzam kal mehira berega yavo. Hashem comes in an instant. Kimoy shaba hasufa v'hasara. A new insight. He's the first one willing to tell us the significance of the word sar. The significance. This is instantaneous. There are many ways, we get the impression many times that when punishment comes upon man, it comes gradually. Hashem is very slow, a slow-moving machine. Things generally come to man gradually, not always. When Hashem wants, he can bring punishment in an instant. The metaphor of a sa'ora and a sufa are punishments that come instantaneously. They come in a moment. No warning. Out of nowhere comes a strong gush of wind. A tornado. There are no warnings for a tornado. It just comes. It just happens. Conditions are present and it happens. This is a dogma, a metaphor, that when Hashem wants, Hashem can bring punishment in an instant. He doesn't need long preparation and hachonois that we more commonly associate with Hashem. Next, what else? The anan avak raglav in yonik inyin chayshach darkness kemo bahi anan vachayshach avak raglav hagezeros habos misiboso al ha'ivim heim lachem lachayshach va'afelo v'im shilom la'avak hanoifel mitachas raglayim. Hashem brings darkness. This week's parsha is chayshach afelo. Darkness, immobilizing darkness. Today, doctors will tell you that we always thought of in darkness means there was a thickness. People, Rachmana Litzlan, who are clinically depressed, will tell you that they can't move. They'll tell you that you can feel the darkness. When a person, Rachmana Litzlan, has a chemical imbalance and he is clinically depressed, they literally are in a daze. They cannot move to such a degree where the intensity of the inability to move forward in life is ki'ilu vayimoshesh choshech. They can actually feel the darkness. There's probably never been a generation that had an understanding of what it means vayimoshesh choshech like our generation. Ayin panim l'toyra. We always were taught as children, it was dark. What does it mean it was dark? It was cloudy outside, right? It was like a lunar and a solar eclipse at the same time. Such thing exists. Okay, a lunar, total darkness. The earth is black. Not only is it dark, there was some type of substance to the darkness. People couldn't move. They were suspended in midair. Someone was diving into a pool, right, in Egypt. They were going into, and then it came the moment when vayimoshesh choshech, he was suspended in midair. If someone was when parachute was diving from an airplane, going on some type of vacation, and jumped off a plane, And it came the moment of Moshe Shchoshach, he was suspended in midair for 3 days. That's what they taught us in kindergarten. And we have to assume, we have mechuyev to believe that's correct. But there's another dimension. Now in this generation, more than ever, we have another dimension, that is, they were depressed. It finally, and it makes a lot of sense, because what is, you have to find logic to the makos. There has to be some logic. Dam, Sardeya, Kinim, Orov, Dever, Shtim, Bara. What's the logic? What's the logic? Choshech is right before makas b'choyres. Depression. If you translate the word choshech as depression, clinical, severe depression, that's right. That's the end. That is the end of the makas. Hashem destroyed the Egyptians to such a degree, it finally hit them. It finally sunk in what a lowly nation they are and the degree of their corruption and what is in store for them as punishment for what they have done to the Jewish people, the Am HaNivchar. Here, after all of these makos, they see the beauty of Klal Yisrael. They're dumbstruck. Where have we been all these years? What kind of life are we living? What's the purpose of life? Looking at the beauty of Klal Yisrael, they get depressed. And also it makes a lot of then to top it off with Makas Bechoros. And see, this is a very interesting concept. Why did the Egyptians chase after Klal Yisrael after Makas Bechoros? Vahi b'shalach Paro sa'am. Paro then decides, you know what? Let's bring out our 600 best chariots and let's pursue them into the Yam. What are you, suicidal? Are you crazy? What are you doing? You already saw you, but you're finished. They finished you off. They left. What are you chasing after them? If you learn that the Mak of Choshech was Stama Makah, it's a very, very great, it's a very big question. But here's the catch. This you have to bring in, a real world-class expert on clinical depression to understand how the mind works. If Klal Yisrael, if the Egyptians suffered extreme clinical depression right before Makas Bechoros, it makes sense why they would chase after the Jewish people. Because it's a frame of mind. When a person is very, very depressed, and then he comes out of the depression, you go to an extreme. You go to an extreme to take back your life. If Stamaza, you're being beaten. Person is, you're fighting, right? You're fighting, you're in a boxing match, and someone's punching you. They give you a zetz, another zetz, another zetz. Listen, you beat me, okay? You hit me enough times. Now the match is over. You're down for the count. And then you get up. You're not going to go back and beat up your opponent. You already lost. But if a person, it's not a matter of physical weakness. It's a frame of mind of depression, and then you come out of that depression, it's natural for a person to his frame of mind to go to the opposite extreme, to take back his life, take back what's been denied from him. It would make a lot of sense for the Egyptians to chase after Klal Yisrael, to destroy them after they left Egypt, if they are in recovery from clinical depression. Now, in order to understand this, Rachman Lusson, you have to experience it to a degree. But I think every person to a certain degree in their life experience depression. Hopefully no one experiences it to the degree where you're under medication. But everyone to a degree understands what it means, depression. And when a person recovers from depression, you go to the other extreme. Take back what bothered you. If choyshech also means a darkness of the mind to a degree where you're totally immobilized, and then there was recovery, it makes a lot of sense why the Egyptians would do something suicidal to chase after Klal Yisrael and run after them into the Yam. But if Choshech means nothing more than being immobilized, suffering, I can't move around, it's very dark and foggy, I have a hard time moving around from place to place, it's just another Makkah. So you've already been beaten 10 times, why would you be so foolish to commit suicide and chase after the Jewish people into the Yam? You got to be out of your mind. Why would you do that? You've already been beaten 10 times. The answer is it's only a good question if Choshech is nothing more than another Makkah. But if Choshech is a Makkah of the mind, it's a Makkah of depression, and now the Makkah is over and there's recovery from the depression, it changes everything. It changes the person's frame of mind, where he would be like bent back like a rubber band. It's like Hashem is setting them up for Kriyas Yamsuf with Choshech and Makas B'Choros. In other words, I'm trying to say to you is Arba, these three Makas, these six parashah are very unique. Arba, let's for the moment assume is a Makkah. But Choshech and Makas B'Choros is like pulling back a rubber band, all in preparation for Kriyas Yamsuf. Hashem pulled them back, pulled the rubber band back with Choshech. Makas B'Choros was the release of the rubber band. And then together with Makas B'Choros and the effect of Choshech is what caused the Egyptians to chase after Klal Yisrael into the Yam. Okay, this is a PhD thesis on psychology to explain Choshech and Makas B'Choros was the trigger for Kriyas Yamsuf. And the reason why I'm telling this to you today is not only because this expires, because this is what it says over here in this last expression. Hashem's ways are the onon avak raglov. There is a cloud which is darkness, which is the dust of Hashem's feet. It's the way of Hashem. Hashem brings upon mankind depression. He brings upon mankind darkness as a punishment for their sins. But that punishment of darkness is not just a punishment. Hashem sets up our enemies for the next step of failure. Bringing depression upon a person is a catalyst for what comes next. Depression is always, in science, a catalyst for what comes next. Rahmana litzlan, people can commit suicide. The darkness of depression can lead, rahmana litzlan, to suicide. And if it does not lead to suicide, if it is caught and it is dealt with, it leads to extreme growth and development. Okay? Opposite. I remember watching this documentary about Christopher Reeve, Superman. And he describes, after he had his accident, where he fell off, where he was paralyzed, paraplegic, quadriplegic, the most severe type of paralysis from the neck down. It's like Mamish Pile Ploim, how the man who was the world's, he was my hero. My mother took me to see Superman when I was a kid. I was blown away, you know, a child to see Superman in color, big in the movie theater. Wow, Christopher Reeve. And I'm sure I was one of millions who looked at this person as Superman. You know what it is for a child to look at a person as being Superman? Okay, it's not real. It's still in me, it's in my blood. Superman, Christopher Reeve, and the Hashgacha that Hashem took this person and made him in front of the whole world a quadriplegic, the most paralyzed person you could possibly, not from the waist, not from the neck down, to a degree where super, the total extreme opposite, what Hashem is not speaking to the world. You got to be blind not to say that Hashem is not talking to the world and what happened to him. Tel Rachmanis. And I watched a documentary, and he described very eloquently the extreme degree of depression that he was in. How you cannot reach such a low in this world. The degree of lowliness, of feeling to be in that state, was beyond words. And he describes it. You can go on YouTube, type in his name, and look for a documentary describing his matzav. And that was a catalyst into the heroic efforts that probably no person ever in his matzav tried to break, to heal himself. I mean, the things that he did, the exercises, and nothing worked, obviously. End of the day, he wasn't able to accomplish very much, but it's not to be imagined how hard he tried. And so where did that come from? It came from his depression. Depression is a catalyst for what comes next. What can come next is either suicide, Rachmanu Litzlan, which happens, Rachmanu Litzlan, if it's not caught, and if it is caught and is dealt with, it's a springboard for something extreme in the opposite direction. The Egyptians did something extremely foolish by chasing after Klal Yisrael after they'd been beaten to smithereens after the 10 Makos. It doesn't make one bit of sense. Not one bit of, go super analyze any, take the story of the Egyptians to any college, to any school of psychology, and lay out the details and ask them why in the world would they, after the Exodus, chase after the Jewish people. It doesn't make one bit of sense. But when you add to the equation that the makah of Choshech was not just stam a makah of immobilization, it was the makah of the mind of extreme depression. And then there was a recovery of that extreme depression. Then everything makes sense. Hashem was setting them up to want to take back their lives by doing something extreme, pursuing Klal Yisrael into the Yam in a way that was suicidal, in order to bring about a greater Kavod Shamayim. It makes sense, because that's exactly how the mind works. And here as well, we have to appreciate now with that idea in mind, that if Hashem brings upon our enemies depression, the way of Hashem is the anon avak raglov, that's not the end. That's just a necessary step for something foolish that they're about to do afterwards, which will bring about a greater kivoid shamayim. Mochemes goig umogoig. What's Mochemes goig umogoig going to be? It's going to be after they're in a state of depression. The truth is, in today's world, the world is suffering depression. Okay, the whole world today is depressed. It's a reality. Some people have achieved extreme wealth. Some people are extremely poor, most people. But the world, by and large, they have nothing to work for anymore. So, and if they're not religious, if you don't have a belief in if you're busy out on the field, in the farm, struggling to survive, you don't have time to think about, to get depressed. You're busy. If you're busy making a parnasa, you don't have time to get depressed. But when you have too much time on your hands, then you get depressed if you have no values in life. So societies pretty much have what they have. They have what they have. And what's next? If God is not in the equation, what's next? There's depression. And that's why people are doing, look at what's going on in America, the world, all these crazy shootings in schools. Doesn't make one bit of sense, all these crazy things. All this behavior out in the country, in the world, of people doing crazy things is all a symptom of depression. Is that society is depressed. Why is Hashem making the society depressed? Because depression is a catalyst for Milchemet Gog u'Magog. People, they're depressed. It's putting mankind into a frame of mind. And then something's going to happen. And that, what's going to happen, is going to be the release of the depression. Something extreme, which will not make one bit of sense, which will be Milchemes Goig u'Magog, and that will bring the Geula. How do I know this? That's the 10 Makos. The 10 Makos are Maise Ovois Simin Lebanon. Throughout history, from the beginning of Golis, the first, when Golis began, there was Makas Dam, the society. Then came Tsardeya. Then came Kenan. Then came Oroiv. Then came Borod. Dever, and Borod, Shechin, Arbe. Now we're living in Ikvisod de Meshicha. Ikvisod de Meshicha, the world is experiencing Choshech. We're living now in the time of Choshech. The Maise Ovoi Simin Lebanon. Mitzrayim is just a marshal for world history. The Dalid Malchios, Azra Mechol can tell you a lot better than I. We're now holding in the Tekufa of Choshech, and the world is depressed. And we have to understand depression is not just a makkah. Depression is something extremely dangerous, because depression is not a means to an end. Depression is a catalyst for something that comes next. Either it will result in, Rahman al-Islam, suicide, or it results in extreme behavior that can never be predicted. Milchemes Goig u'Magog, Chazal say over and over, is something which makes absolutely no sense. It's suicidal behavior, irresponsible behavior, things that do not make any sense. Just like chasing Klal Yisrael into the Yam did not make one bit of sense. And that was an outgrowth of Choshech, with the Makeh Bepatish of Makas Bechoros. Kalman?
Yeah, there is something that I also connected to the Choshech with this thing. Choshech is lack of light. When you put a nation in such a... The light disappeared completely. Then they feel something is missing. I cannot function in it. When the purpose of the Egyptians for 210 years is to enslave the Jewish people. Now, when they left, so they have no purpose in life. What did they do? Suddenly, who should I say? Should I beat my wife? What should I do now? I need them.
They were depressed, had nothing more to do. Now they're in the Choshech. Okay? They're chasing the light. Okay? Okay, we'll stop here.
That's the raison d'être.